In the weeks that followed, they seldom spoke of Tia or the Flyers' Council, but news came to them regularly without being sought. A crier in the Thossey village square, gossip from shopkeepers, travellers who sought out Evan for healing or advice, they all spoke of war and Flyers and the belligerent landsmen. On South Arran, Maris knew, the Flyers of Windhaven were gathering. The landbound of that small island would never forget these days, any more than the people of Greater and Lesser Amberley had ever forgotten the last council. By now the streets of Southport and Arranton, small, dusty towns she remembered well, would have a festive air to them. Wine-sellers and bakers and sausage-makers and merchants would converge from a half-dozen nearby islands, crossing treacherous seas in unsteady boats, in hopes of making a few irons from the Flyers. The inns and taverns would be full, and Flyers would be everywhere, throngs of them, swelling the little towns to bursting. Maris could see them in her mind's eye. Flyers from Big Shotan in their dark red uniforms, cool, pale Artelians with silver crowns about their brows, priests of the sky god from Southern, outer islanders and Emberites whom no one had seen in years. Old friends would hug each other and talk away the nights. Old lovers would trade uncertain smiles and find other ways to pass the dark hours. Singers and storytellers would tell the old tales and compose new ones to suit the occasion. The air would be full of gossip and boasting and song, fragrant with the scents of spiced kivas and roasted meat. All of her friends would be there, Maris thought. In her dreams she saw them, young Flyers and old ones, one-wings and flyer-born, the proud and the timid, the troublemakers and the compliant. All of them would assemble, and the sheen of their wings and the sound of their laughter would fill South Arran. And they would fly. Maris tried not to think of that, but the thought came unbidden, and in her dreams she flew with them. She could feel the wind as she slept, touching her with knowing, gentle fingers, carrying her to ecstasy. Around her she could see their wings, hundreds of them, bright against the deep blue sky, turning and banking in graceful, languid circles. Her own wing caught the light of the sun and flashed briefly, brilliantly, a soundless cry of joy. She saw the wings at sunset, blood red against an orange and purple sky, fading slowly to indigo, then turning silver white again, when the last light vanished and there were only stars to fly by. She remembered the taste of the rain and the throb of distant thunder, and the way the sea looked at dawn just before the sun came up. She remembered the way it felt to run and cast herself from a Flyer's cliff, trusting wind and wings and her own skill to keep her in the air. Sometimes she trembled and cried out in the night, and Evan wrapped his arms around her and whispered soothing promises. But Maris did not tell him of her dreams. He had never been a Flyer or seen a Flyer's council, and he would not understand. Time passed. The sick came to Evan, or he to them, and died or grew well. Maris and Barry worked at his side, doing what they could. But Maris found that her mind was not always in the work she did. Once Evan sent her into the forest to gather sweet song, a herb he used to make tessis. But Maris found herself thinking of the council as she wandered in the cool, damp woods. "It has started by now," she thought. And in her head she heard the speeches they must be making, Val and Corm and the rest, and she weighed their arguments and set others up against them and wondered where it would all go and whom they had chosen to preside. When she finally returned, beneath her arm was a basket of liar's weed, which looks almost like sweet song but has no healing properties. Evan took the basket and sighed loudly, shaking his head. "Maris, Maris," he muttered, "what am I to do with you?" He turned to Barry. "Girl," he said, "go fetch me some sweet song before it grows too dark. Your aunt is not feeling well." Maris could only agree with him. Then one day Cole returned, trudging up the road with his guitar across his back, some 6 weeks after he had left them. He was not alone. Sweller walked by his side, still wearing her wings and stumbling like one half asleep. Their faces were grey and drawn. When Barry saw them coming, she gave a loud cry and ran to embrace her father. Maris turned to Sweller. "Sweller, are you all right? How did the council go?" Sweller began to weep. Maris went to her and took her old friend in her arms, feeling her shake. Twice she tried to speak, but only gasped and choked. It's all right, Sweller," Maris said helplessly. There, it's all right. I'm here." Her eyes found Cole's. "Barry," Cole said in a shaky voice, "go find Evan and bring him out to us." Barry, with a worried glance at Sweller, ran to obey. "I was at the landsman's keep," Cole said when his daughter had gone. "He learned that I was your brother and decided to detain me until the council was over. Sirella flew in after the council. The landsguard took her and brought her to the keep as well. He had other flyers there too. Jim, Ligar of Thrain, Catin of Lomeran, some poor child from Western. Besides the flyers and myself, there were four other singers, a couple of storytellers, and of course all the landsman's own criers and runners. He wants the word to spread, you see. He wants everyone to know what he did. We were his witnesses. The landsguard marched us out into the courtyard and forced us to watch." "No," Maris said, pressing Sweller closer. "No, Cole, he didn't dare. He couldn't." "Tia of Deos was hanged yesterday at sunset," Cole said bluntly. "And denying it won't change it. I saw it. She tried to make a speech, but the landsman would not allow it. The noose wasn't tied properly. Her neck didn't break in the fall, and it was a long time before she strangled to death." Sweller pulled away from her embrace. "You were lucky," she said with difficulty. "He could have sent for you." "Oh, Maris, I couldn't look away. It was awful. They wouldn't even let her have last words. And the worst..." Her voice caught again. Evan and Barry were coming, but Maris barely heard their footsteps or Evan's cry of greeting. A great coldness had settled on her, the same numb sickness she had felt when Russ had died, when Halland had been lost at sea. "How could he dare?" she said slowly. "Didn't anyone do anything? Was there no one to stop him? Several landsguard officers cautioned him against it. One high officer in particular, I believe she commands his bodyguard. He would not listen. The landsguard who marched us out were clearly frightened. Several averted their eyes when the trap was opened. In the end, though, they obeyed. They are landsguard, after all, and he is their landsman." "But the council," said Maris. "Why didn't the council? What about Val, the flyers?"
"The council," said Sweller bitterly. "The council named her outlaw and stripped her wings from her." Anger had pushed her tears aside. "The council gave him leave to do it." "And so everyone would know that he was hanging a flyer," Cole said wearily. "The landsman put her wings on her. Folded, of course, but still unmistakable. He joked about it. He told her to use her wings to break this fall and fly away."
Later, over cups of Evan's special tea and plates of bread and sausage, Sweller regained her composure and told Maris and Evan the whole story of the disastrous council while Cole went outside to talk with his daughter. It was a simple story. Val Onewing, who had called the fifth Flyers' Council in the history of Windhaven, had lost control of it. He had never had control, in fact. His Onewings and allies made up barely a fourth of those assembled, and the three who sat in the positions of honour, the landsman of North and South Arran, and the retired flyer Colmy of Tha Krill, who presided, were unsympathetic. No sooner had the meeting begun than angry voices were raised to denounce Tia and her crime, including that of Colmy himself. "This land-bound girl never understood what it means to be a flyer," Srella quoted Colmy as saying. Others joined the chorus. "She should never have been given wings," said one. "She'd committed a crime not only against her landsmen, but against her fellow flyers as well," said another. "She has betrayed her sacred trust, has made all flyers suspect," added a third. "Catin of Lomaron tried to speak for her," Srella told them, "but he was hooted down. Catin grew furious and cursed them all. Like Tia, he has seen a lot of war. Some of Tia's friends tried to defend her, at least explain why she did the thing she did, but others refused to listen. When Val himself rose and tried to put forward his proposal, I thought briefly that we had a chance. He was very good, calm and reasonable, unlike his usual self. He placated them by admitting that Tia had committed a great crime, but went on to say that the flyers had to defend her nonetheless, that we could not afford to let the landsman have his way with her, that our fates were linked with Tia's. It was a very good speech. If it had come from anyone else, it might have swayed them. But it came from Val, and the arena was full of his enemies. So many of the older flyers still hate him. Val suggested that the council strip Tia of her wings for 5 years, after which she would have to win them back in competition. He also said that we had to insist that only flyers could judge flyers, which meant freeing her from Theos by threat of a sanction. He had people ready to second his proposal and speak in its behalf, but it did no good. Colmy never recognized us. We were never given a chance to speak. The council went on most of the day, and I'd say barely a dozen one-wings ever got to speak. Colmy just wouldn't let us be heard. After Val, he recognized a woman from Lomaron, who talked about how Val's father had been hanged as a murderer and how Val himself had driven Ari to suicide by taking her wings. "No wonder he wants us to defend this criminal," she said. Others like her followed. There was much talk of crime, of one-wings who only half understood what it meant to be a flyer, and Val's proposal got lost in the chaos. Then some older flyers put forth a proposal to close the academies. That wasn't popular. Corm spoke in favor of it, but his own daughter rose against him. It was quite a sight. The Artelians were for it, too, and some of the retired flyers, and they managed to force a vote. But less than a fifth of the council voted with them. The academies are safe. "We can be thankful for that much," Maris said. Srella nodded. Then Dorel spoke. "You know how highly he's regarded. He gave a fine speech, much too fine. He spoke first of Tia's idealistic motivations and how much sympathy he had for what she had tried to do. But then he said we couldn't let sympathy or other emotions decide our course. Tia's crime struck right at the soul of flyer society," Dorel said. "If the landsman could not count on flyers to bear their messages truthfully and dispassionately, to act as their voices in distant lands, then what was the use of us? And if they had no use for us, how long until they took our wings by force and replaced us with their own men?" "We could not fight the Landsguard," he said. "We had to regain the trust that had been lost, and the only way to do that was to name Tia outlaw, despite her good intentions. To leave her to her fate, no matter how much we sympathized with her. If we defended Tia in any way," Dorel said, "the landbound would misunderstand, would think we approved of her crime. We had to make our censure clear." Maris nodded. "Much of that is true," she said, "no matter how grim the consequences. I can see how it might be persuasive." Others of like mind followed Dorel. Terakul of Yethian, old Aris of Artelia, a woman from the Outer Islands, John of Kalhol, Talbot of Big Shotan, leaders each of them, and highly respected. All of them supported Dorel. Val seethed, and Catin and Athen were screaming for the floor, but Colmy looked right past them. The talk went on for hours, and finally, in less than a minute, Val's proposal was brought up and voted down, and the council went on to name Tia outlaw and give her up to the tender mercies of Theos.
We did not tell the landsman to hang her. At the suggestion of Jirel of Skalny, we went so far as to ask him not to. But it was only a request.
Our landsman seldom heeds requests, Evan said quietly.
That was the end of it for me, Srella continued. That was when the Wanwings left.
Left?
Srella nodded.
When the vote was done, Val rose from his place, and his look. I'm glad he had no weapon or he might have killed someone. Instead, he spoke. He called them all fools and cowards and worse. There were shouts, curses back at him, some scuffles. Val called on all his friends to leave. Damon and I had to push through to the door. The flyers, some of them I recognized, people I've known for years, but they were jeering, saying things to us. It was horrible, Maris, the anger there.
You got out, though?
Yes, and we flew to North Arran, almost all of the Wanwings. Val led us to a large field, an old battlefield, and he stood on top of a ruined fortification and spoke to us. We had our own council. A fourth of all the flyers of Windhaven were there. We voted to impose a sanction on Deos, even if the others would not. That was why Catin flew here with me. We were to tell the landsmen together. He had already been sent word of the other decision, but Catin and I were going to confront him with the One-Wing's threat. She laughed bitterly. He listened to us coldly, and when we were finished, he said that we and all of our kind were unfit to be flyers, and that nothing would please him more than never to have a One-Wing fly to Deos again. He promised to show us exactly what he thought of us and Val and all One-Wings. And he showed us. At sunset, his landguard came, and we were marched into the courtyard with the rest, and he showed us. Her face was grey. The recounting of the tale had opened her wounds again.
Oh, Srella, Maris said sorrowfully. She reached out and took her friend's hand, but when they touched, Srella gave a sudden startled shudder, and then again began to weep.
Sleep did not come easily for Maris. She twisted and turned restlessly. Her dreams were dark and shapeless, nightmares of flights that ended at the end of a rope. She woke hours before dawn in darkness to the faint sound of distant music. Evan was asleep beside her, snoring softly into his feather pillow. Maris rose and dressed and wandered from the bedroom. Barry was resting comfortably, a child's innocent sleep, free of the burdens that weighed on the rest of them. Srella slept too, hunched beneath blankets. Cole's room was empty. Maris followed the sound of the soft, fading music. She found him outside, sitting up against the side of the house in the starlight, filling the cool pre-dawn air with the quiet melancholy of his guitar. Maris sat on the damp ground beside him.
"Are you making a song?"
"Yes," Cole said. His fingers moved with slow deliberation.
"How did you know?"
"I remembered," Maris said. "When we were young together, you used to rise in the middle of the night and go outside to work on some new tune you wanted to keep secret." Cole struck a final plaintive chord before he set the guitar aside.
"I'm still a creature of habit, then," he said. "Well, I have no choice. When the words scurry about in my head, they do not let me sleep."
"Is it finished?"
"No. I have a mind to call it Tears Fall, and the words have mostly come to me, but not the tune. I can almost hear it, but I hear it differently at different times. Sometimes it's dark and tragic, a slow, sad song like the ballad of Aaron and Jenny. But later it seems to me it should be faster, that it should pulse like the blood of a man choking on his own rage, that it should burn and hurt and throb.
What do you think, Big Sister? How should I do it? What does Tears Fall make you feel? Sorrow or anger?"
"Both," said Maris. "That's no help, but it's all the answer I can give. Both. And more. I feel guilty, Cole." She told him of Arilan and his companions and the offer they'd come bearing. Cole listened sympathetically, and when she had finished, he took her hand in his own.
His fingers were covered with calluses, but gentle and warm.
"I did not know," he said. Srella said nothing.
"I doubt Srella knows," Maris said. "Val probably told Aralan not to speak of my refusal. He has a good heart, Val One-Wing, whatever they might say of him."
"Your guilt is foolish," Cole told her. "Even if you had gone, I doubt it would have mattered. One person, more or less, changes little. The council would have broken with or without you, and Tia would have been hanged. You shouldn't torture yourself with remorse for something you couldn't have changed."
"Perhaps you're right," Maris said. "But I should have tried, Cole. They might have listened to me. Doral and his friends, the Stormtown group, Corina, even Corm. They know me, all of them. Val could never reach them. But I might have managed to keep the Flyers together if I'd gone and presided as Val asked me to."
"Speculation," said Cole. "You're giving yourself needless pain."
"Perhaps it's time I gave myself pain," Maris said. "I was afraid of hurting again. That was why I didn't go with Aralan when he came for me. I was a coward."
"You can't be responsible for all the Flyers of Windhaven, Maris. You have to think of yourself first, of your own needs."
Maris smiled. "A long time ago I thought only of myself, and I changed the whole world around to suit me. Oh, I told myself it was for everybody. But you and I know it was really for me. Barion was right, Cole. I was naive. I had no idea where it would all lead. I knew only that I wanted to fly. I should have gone, Cole. It was my responsibility. But all I cared about was my pain, my life, when I should have been thinking of larger things. Tia's blood is on my hands."
She held one up. Cole took it and squeezed it hard.
"Nonsense. All I see is my sister tearing herself apart for nothing.
Tia is gone. There's nothing you could have done. And even if there had been, there's certainly nothing you can do now. It's over."
"Never anguish about the past," Barion once told me. "Make your pain into a song and give it to the world."
"I can't make songs," Maris said. "I can't fly. I said I wanted to be of use, but I turned my back on the people who needed me and played at being a healer. I'm not a healer. I'm not a flyer. So what am I? Who am I?"
"Maris, just so," she said. "Maris of Lesser Amberley, the girl who once changed the world. If I did it once, perhaps I can do it again. At least I can try."
She stood up abruptly, her face serious in the wan pale light of dawn, whose faint glow had tinted the eastern horizon.
"Tia is dead," Cole said. He took his guitar and rose to stand face to face with his stepsister. "The council is broken. It's over, Maris."
"No," she said. "I won't accept that. It's not over. It's not too late to change the end of Tia's song."
Evan woke quickly to her light touch, sitting up in bed and ready for any emergency.
"Evan," Maris said, sitting beside him, "I know what I must do. I had to tell you first."
He ran one hand over his head, smoothing down the ruffled white hair, frowning.
"What?" I am alive, Evan. I cannot fly, but I am still who I am."
"It's good to hear you say that and know you mean it.
And I'm not a healer. I'll never be a healer."
"You've been making discoveries, haven't you? All this while I slept?"
"Yes. I've known, although I couldn't quite tell you. You didn't seem to want to know."
"Of course I didn't want to know. I thought it was the only choice I had. What else was there for me?
Pain, only memories of pain and uselessness.
Well, the pain is still there, and the memories. But I need not be useless. I must learn to live with the pain, accept it or ignore it, because there are things I must do. Tia is dead, and the Flyers are broken, and there are things that only I can do to set things right. So you see..." She bit her lip and couldn't quite meet his eyes.
"I love you, Evan. But I must leave you."
"Wait!" He touched her cheek and she met his eyes. She thought of the first time she had looked into their deep blue depths, and she felt unexpectedly strong, a pang of loss.
"Tell me now," he said, "why you must leave me."
She moved her hands helplessly. "Because I'm useless here. I don't belong here." He caught his breath. It might have been a sob or a laugh that he swallowed. She couldn't tell.
"Did you think I loved you as an apprentice, as a healer, Maris? For how much you could help me? As a healer, quite frankly, you tried my patience.
I love you as a woman, for yourself, for who you are. And now that you've realized who you are, who you have always been, you think you must leave me?"
"There are things I must do," she said. "I don't know what my fate will be. I may fail. It might be dangerous for you to be associated with me. You might share Rennie's fate. I don't want to risk you."
"You can't risk me," he said firmly. "I risk myself." He took her hand and held it tightly. "There may be things I can do to help. Let me do them. I'll share your burden, share the danger, and make it less. I can do more than just make tea for your friends, you know."
"But you don't have to," Maris said. "You shouldn't risk your life for nothing. This isn't your fight."
"Not my fight?" He sounded mildly indignant. "Isn't Theos my home? What the landsman of Theos decrees affects me, my friends, my patients. My blood is in these mountains and in this forest. You are the stranger here. Whatever you accomplish for your people, the Flyers, will also affect my people. And I know them as you cannot. They know me, and they trust me here.
Many owe me debts, debts that cannot be paid in iron coin. They will help me, and I will help you. I think you need my help."
Maris felt as if strength was pouring through her, traveling from the firm clasp of his hand up her arm. She smiled, glad that she was not alone, feeling more certain of her way now.
"Yes, Heaven, I do need you. You have me.
How do we begin?" Maris leant back against the wooden headboard, fitting into the curve of Evan's arm. "We need a hidden place, a landing field, a place safe for Flyers to come and go without the landsman or his spies knowing they are on Theos." She felt his nod as soon as she'd finished speaking.
"Done," he said. "There is an abandoned farm not far from here. The farmer died only last winter, so the forest has not reclaimed the place, although it will shelter it from spying eyes."
"Good. Perhaps we should all move there for a time, in case the Landsguard come looking for us."
"I must stay here," Evan said. "If the Landsguard cannot find me, neither can the sick. I must be available to them."
"It might not be safe for you."
"I know a family in Thossi, a family with 13 children. I helped the mother through a difficult birthing and saved her children from death half a dozen times. They would eagerly do the same for me. Their house is on the main road, and there is always a child to spare. If the Landsguard come for us, they must pass by there, and one of the children could run ahead to warn us."
Maris smiled. "Perfect.
What else?"
"First, we must wake Srella." Maris sat up, moving out of his light embrace, and swung her legs over the edge of the bed. "I need her to be my wings, to fly messages for me, many messages. But one first, the crucial one, to Val One Wing." Val came to her, of course. She waited for him in the doorway of a cramped two-room plank cabin, badly weathered, its furnishings covered with mould. He circled three times above the weed-choked field, silver wings dark against a threatening sky, before he decided that it was safe to land. When he came down, she helped him with his wings, although something clutched and trembled within her when her hands touched the soft metal fabric. Val embraced her and smiled.
"You're looking well for an old cripple," he said.
"You're very glib for an idiot," Maris said back at him. "Come inside."
Col was within the cabin, tuning his guitar.
"Val," he said, nodding.
"Sit," Maris said to Val. "I've something I want you to hear."
He glanced at her, puzzled, but he sat. Col sang Tia's fall. At his sister's urging, he had composed two versions. He gave Val the sad one. Val listened politely with only a hint of restlessness.
"Very pretty," he said when Col was done. "Very sad."
He looked sharply at Maris.
"Is this why you sent Srella to me and had me fly here at risk of my life, in spite of my pledge never to come to Theos? For this? To listen to a song?"
He frowned.
"How badly did that fall injure your head?"
Col laughed.
"Give her half a chance," he said.
"It's all right," Maris said. "Val and I are used to each other, aren't we?" Val smiled thinly.
"You have half a chance," he said. "Tell me what this is all about."
"Tia," Maris said, in a word, "and how to mend what was broken in council." Val frowned.
"That's too late. Tia is dead. We responded, and now we wait to see what will happen."
"If we wait, then it will be too late. We can't afford to wait for the flyers to close the academies or limit challenges to those who promise to ignore your sanction. You've given a weapon to Corm and his kind by walking out, by acting without the support of the council." Val shook his head.
"I did what had to be done. And there are more one-wings every year. The landsman of Theos may laugh now, but he will not laugh forever."
"You don't have forever," Maris said. She was silent a moment, her thoughts tumbling so fast that she was afraid to speak. She couldn't afford to alienate Val. They did understand each other, as she had told Col, but Val was still prickly and temperamental, as his actions in council had proved, and it would be hard for him to admit that he had been wrong.
"I should have come when you sent for me," she said after a moment, "but I was afraid and selfish. Perhaps I could have kept this split from taking place."
Val said flatly, "That's useless. What happened, happened."
"That doesn't mean it can't be changed. I understand you felt you had to do something, but what you did may turn out to be a lot worse than doing nothing could have been. What if the flyers decide to strip you of your wings, to ground all the one-wings?"
"Let 'em try."
"What could you do? Fight them individually, hand to hand? No! If the flyers should decide to take away the wings from all those who participate in your sanction, there would be nothing you could do. Nothing except, perhaps, to kill a few flyers and see a lot more one-wings die like Tia. The landsmen would support the flyers with all the power of the landsguard."
"If that happens," Val stared at Maris, his face dangerously still, "if that happens, you'll live to see your dream die. Does that mean so much to you, still, when you know that you can never fly again yourself?"
"This is more important than my dream or my life," Maris said. "It's gone beyond that. You know that. You care too, Val."
The silence in the little cabin seemed to close around them. Even Col's fingers were motionless upon the strings of his guitar.
"Yes," said Val, the word like a sigh. "But what... what can I do?"
"Revoke this sanction," Maris said promptly, "before your enemies use it against you."
"Will a landsman revoke Tia's hanging?"
"No, Maris, this sanction is the only power we have. The other flyers must join us in it, or we must stay split."
"It's a useless gesture, you know that," Maris said. "Theos will not miss the one-wings. The flyer born will come and go as always, and the landsman will have plenty of wings to bear his words. It means nothing."
"It means we will keep our word, that we do not make idle threats. Besides, the sanction was voted by all of us. I could not revoke it alone if I wanted to."
"You're wasting your breath."
Maris smiled scornfully, but inside she felt hopeful. Val was beginning to back down. "Don't play games with me, Val. You are the One Wings. That's why I called you here. We both know they will do whatever you suggest."
"Are you really asking me to forget what the landsman did? To forget Tia?
No one will forget Tia."
A soft chord sounded.
"My song will assure that," Col said. "I'll sing it in Port Theos in a few days. Other singers will steal it. Soon it will be heard everywhere."
Val stared at him in disbelief.
"You mean to sing that song in Port Theos? Are you mad?
Don't you know that the very name of Tia raises curses and fights in Port Deas? Sing that song there in any tavern, and I'll wager you'll be left in a gutter with your throat slit open.
Singers are given a certain license, Cole said, especially if they're good. The first mention of Tia's name may bring jeers, but after they've heard my song, they'll feel differently. Before long, Tia will have become a hero, a tragic victim. That will be because of my song, although few will admit or realize it.
I've never heard such arrogance, Val said, sounding bemused. He looked at Maris. Did you put him up to this?
We discussed it.
Did you discuss the fact that he's likely to be killed? Some people may be willing to listen to a song that makes Tia sound noble, but some furious, drunken landsguard will try to stop this singer from spreading his lies and crush his head in. Did you think of that?
I can watch out for myself, Cole said. Not all my songs are popular, especially at first.
It's your life, Val said, shaking his head. If you live long enough, I suppose your singing may make some difference.
I want you to send some more flyers here, Maris said. One wings, who can sing and play at least possibly well.
You want Call to train them for the day when they lose their wings?
His song must go beyond Theos as quickly as possible, Maris said. I want flyers who can learn it well enough to teach it to singers wherever they go, and I want them to go everywhere with that song as a message from us. All of Windhaven will know of Tia, and will sing Call's song of what she tried to do.
Val looked thoughtful.
Very well, he said.
I'll send my people here in secret. Away from Theos, the song may be popular.
You will also spread the word that the sanction against Theos has been revoked.
I will not, he snapped. Tia must be avenged by more than a song.
Did you ever know Tia? Maris asked. Don't you know what she tried to do? She tried to prevent war, and to prove to the landsmen that they could not control the flyers. But this sanction will give us back into the hands of the landsmen, because it has split and weakened us. Only by acting together, in unison, do flyers have the strength to defy the landsmen.
Tell that to Darrell, Val said coldly. Don't blame me. I called the council to act together and save Tia, not to bow down before the landsmen of Theos. Darrell took the council away from me, and made us weak. Tell him and see what answer he can give you.
I intend to, Maris said calmly. Sweller is on her way to Laos now.
You mean to bring him here?
Yes.
And others. I can't go to them now. I'm a cripple.
As you said.
She smiled grimly.
Val hesitated, obviously trying to put the pieces together in his mind.
You want more than the sanction revoked, he said finally. That's just the first step, to unite one wing and fly a born. What do you have planned for us, if you can weld us together?
Maris felt her heart lift, knowing that she would have Val's agreement.
Do you know how Tia died? Maris asked. Did you know that the landsman of Theos was cruel and stupid enough to kill her while she wore her wings? Afterward they were stripped from her and given to the man she'd won them from 2 years before. Tia's body was buried in an unmarked grave in a field just outside the keep, where thieves and murderers and other outlaws are customarily buried. She died with her wings on, but she was not allowed a flyer's burial. And she's had no mourners.
What of it? What has this to do with me? What do you really want of me, Maris?
She smiled.
I want you to mourn, Val. That's all. I want you to mourn for Tia.
Maris and Evan heard the news first from the lips of a wandering storyteller, an elderly, waspish woman from Port Theos, who stopped with them briefly so the healer might remove a thorn that had lodged under the skin of one bare foot.
"Our landsguard have taken the mine from Thrain," the woman said, while Evan worked on her. "There is talk of invading Thrain itself."
"Folly," Evan muttered. "More death."
"Is there other news?" Maris asked. Flyers continued to come and go from her secret field, but it had been more than a week since Cole, having passed along his song to a half-dozen one-wings, had taken the road to Port Theos.
The days had been cold and rainy and anxious.
"There is the flyer," the woman said. She winced as Evan's fine bone knife sliced the thorn from her flesh. "Careful, healer," she said.
"The flyer?" Maris said.
"A ghost, some say," the woman said.
Evan had removed the thorn and was rubbing salve into the cut he had made.
"Perhaps Tia's ghost. A woman dressed all in black, silent, restless. She appeared from the west 2 days before I left. The lodgemen came out to meet her, to help her land and care for her wings, but she did not land. She flew silently above the mountains and the landsman's keep, and on across the countryside to Port Theos. Nor did she land there. Since she first came, she has flown in a great circle round and round again from Port Theos to the landsman's keep and back, never landing, never shouting down a word, flying, always flying, in sun or storm, day or night. She's there at sunset and still there at dawn. She neither eats nor drinks."
"Fascinating," Maris said, suppressing a smile. "You think she's a ghost?"
"Perhaps," the old woman said. "I've seen her many times myself. Walking down the alleys of Port Theos, I feel a shadow touch me, and I look up and she's there. She has caused much talk. The people are afraid, and some of the landsguards say that the landsman is most afraid of all, though he tries not to show it. He will not come outside to look at her when she passes above his keep. Perhaps he is afraid of seeing Tia's face."
Evan had wrapped a bandage soaked in ointment around the storyteller's injured foot. "There," he said. "Try standing on that." The woman stood up, leaning on Maris for support.
"It pains a bit."
"It was infected," Evan said. "You're lucky. If you had waited a few days longer to come to a healer, you might have lost the foot. Wear boots. The forest trails are hazardous."
"I do not care for boots," the woman said. "I like the feel of the earth and grass and rock beneath my feet."
"Do you like the feel of thorns beneath your skin?" Evan said. They argued back and forth for a time, and finally the woman agreed to wear a soft cloth boot, but only on her injured foot, and only until it was healed. When she was gone, Evan turned to Maris with a smile.
"So it begins," he said. "How is it that the ghost neither eats nor drinks?"
"She carries a bag of nuts and dried fruit and a skin of water," Maris said. "Flyers often do that on long flights. How do you suppose we could fly to Artelia or the Embers otherwise?"
"I'd never given the matter much thought."
Maris nodded, preoccupied. "I suspect they substitute a second flyer by night secretly to let their ghost rest. Clever of Val to send someone who looks like Tia."
"I should have thought of that."
"You have thought of quite enough," Evan said. "Don't reproach yourself. Why do you look so serious?"
"I wish," Maris said, "that the flyer could be me."
2 days later, a little girl arrived, panting at their door. She was one of that family so indebted to Evan, and for a brief, fearful moment, Maris wondered if the landsguard had come for her already. But it was only news. Evan had asked to be sent word of anything heard in Thossi.
"A merchant came through," said the little girl. "He talked about the flyers."
"What of them?" Maris asked.
"He said he told old Mullish at the inn that the landsman is scared. There are three of them," he said. "Three black flyers going round and round and round."
She stood up and spun in a circle, her small arms outstretched, to show them what she meant. Maris looked at Evan and smiled.
7 black flyers now,"
a huge fat man told them. He'd come to their door, battered and bleeding, a deserter from the landsguard dressed in rags.
"Tried to send me to Thrain," he said by way of explanation. "But damned if I'd go there."
When he wasn't speaking, he coughed, and often he coughed up blood.
7? A bad number,"
the man said, coughing.
"All dressed in black, too. A bad color. They mean us no good."
His coughing suddenly grew so bad he could not talk.
"Easy," Evan said, "easy."
He gave the man wine mixed with herbs, and he and Maris led him to a bed. The fat man would not rest, though. As soon as his coughing fit had ended, he began to talk again.
"If I was landsman, I'd march out my archers and shoot 'em down when they flew overhead. Yes, I would. There's some that says the arrows would just pass through 'em, but not me. I think they're flesh, just like me."
He slapped his ample gut.
"Can't just let 'em fly. They're bringing bad luck to us all. Weather's been bad lately, and the fish haven't been running. And I heard tell of people taking sick and dying in Port Theos when the shadow of those wings touched 'em. Something terrible is going to happen on Thrain, I know it. That's why I wouldn't go. Not with 7 black flyers in the sky, no, not me. This is an evil thing, I tell you, and it won't bring us good."
It brought the fat man no good, at any rate, Maris thought. The next morning, when she brought his breakfast in to him, his huge body was stiff and cold. Evan buried him in the forest among the graves of 12 other travellers.
"Thenya went to Port Theos to try to sell her tapestries," reported another of the horde of children Evan had delivered, a boy this time. "When she came back to Thossi, she said there are more than 12 black flyers now, flying in a great circle from the port to the landsman's keep, and more arriving every day."
20 flyers, all in black, silent, grim, said the young singer. She had golden hair and blue eyes, a sweet voice, and an easy manner. "They'll make a marvelous song. I'd be working on it now if only I knew how it was all going to end."
"Why are they here, do you think?" Evan asked.
"For Tia, of course," the young woman said, startled that anyone would ask. "She lied to stop the war, and the landsmen killed her for it. They wear black for her, I'd wager. Many people are grieving for her."
"Ah, yes," Evan said. "Tia. Her story might make a song itself. Have you thought of making one?"
The singer grinned. "There already is one," she said. "I heard it in Port Theos. Here, I'll sing it for you."
Maris met Catin of Lomeron in the abandoned field, where slender green ruffians and misshapen dirt dragons were fast crowding out the wild wheat. The big man with the Scylla's tooth necklace came down gracefully on silvered wings, dressed all in black. She led him inside and gave him water.
"Well?"
He wiped away the moisture from his lips and grinned at her roughly.
"I flew in very high, and saw the circle far beneath me. Ah, you should have seen it. 40 wings by now, I'd guess. The landsman must be drooling at the mouth. Word has gone out, too. More one-wings are coming from all over Easton, and Vel himself flew the word back to Weston, so it won't be too long before others join us, too. By now there are so many that it's easy to break away for a rest or a meal without anyone being the wiser. I don't envy poor Alane starting it all. She's a strong flyer, no doubt of that. I've never known her to tire. They've got her resting in secret on Thrinel now, but she'll be back to rejoin us soon. As for me, I'm on my way to join the circle now."
Maris nodded. "What about Cole's song?"
"They're singing it on Lomeron, and South Arran, and Kite's Landing. I've heard it myself several times. And it's gone to Southern and the Outer Islands as well. And to Weston, of course, to your Amberley and Cullhall and Poeet. Heard that it's spreading among the singers in Stormtown."
"Good," said Maris.
"Good." "The landsman sent Jem up to question the black flyers," said Evan's friend, repeating the news from Thossi, "and it's said that he recognized them and called on them by name, but they would not speak to him. You ought to come to the city and see them, Evan. Whenever you look up, the sky is full of flyers."
"The landsman has ordered the flyers out of the sky, but they will not go. And why should they? As the singers say, the sky belongs to flyers."
"I heard that a flyer arrived from Thrain with a message from the landsman to ours, but when he met her in the audience chamber to hear it, he turned pale with fear, for the flyer was dressed in black from head to foot. She delivered the message to him as he trembled, but before she could go, the landsman stopped her and demanded to know why she was dressed all in black. 'I go to join the circle,' she told him calmly, 'and grieve for Tia.' And so she did. So she did." They say the singers in Port Theos all dress in black these days, and some other people as well. The streets are full of merchants selling black cloth, and the dyers are very busy.
Jem has joined the Black Flyers!
The landsman has ordered the landsguard back from Thrain. He's afraid of what the Black Flyers might do, I heard, and he wants his best archers around him. The keep is full to overcrowding. It's said that the landsmen will not go outside, lest the shadow of their wings fall upon him as they fly overhead.
Srella arrived with the welcome news that Dorrel was less than a day behind her. Maris kept watch on the cliffs herself all that afternoon, too impatient even to wait at home with Srella. And at last she was rewarded by the sight of a dark figure gliding inland. She hurried into the forest to meet him. It was a hot, still day, bad weather for flying. Maris swiped at attacking insects as she trudged through the tall grass that almost concealed the cabin. Her heart was racing with excitement as she pushed open the heavy wooden door hanging on its hinges. She blinked, almost blind in the dark interior after the brilliant sunshine, and then she felt his hand on her shoulder and heard his familiar voice say her name.
You came, she said. She was suddenly short of breath. Dorrel!
Did you doubt I would come?
She could see now the familiar smile, his well-remembered way of standing.
"Do you mind if we sit down?" he asked. "I'm awfully tired. It was a long flight from Weston, and it did me no good to try to catch up to Srella."
They sat close together on two matching chairs that must once have been very fine, but the cushions were impregnated with dust now, greenish and slightly damp with mould.
"How are you, Maris?"
"I'm living. Ask me again in a month or so, and I may have a better answer for you." She looked into his dark, concerned eyes, and then away again.
"It's been a long time, hasn't it, Dor?"
He nodded.
"When you weren't at the council, I understood. I hoped that you were doing what was best for you. I was more pleased than I can say when Srella came, bearing your message, your request that I come to you."
He sat a little straighter in his chair.
"But surely you didn't send for me just for the pleasure of seeing an old friend."
Maris drew a deep breath.
"I need your help. You know about the Circle, the Black Flyers?"
He nodded.
"Rumours have already spread, and I saw them as I flew in. An impressive sight. You're doing?"
"Yes."
He shook his head. "And not an end in itself, I'll wager. What's your plan?"
"Will you help me with it? We need you."
"We?" "You've sided with the One Wings, I suppose."
His tone was not angry and did not condemn, but Maris was aware that he had withdrawn from her, ever so slightly.
"It's not a matter of sides, Dor. At least not among the Flyers. It mustn't be. That way is death, the end of everything we both hold dear. Flyers, One Wing or Flyer born, must not be split up, fragmented, at the mercy of landsmen."
"I agree, but it's too late. It was too late once Tia declared her scorn for all the laws and traditions by telling her first lie."
"Dor," she said, her voice coaxing and reasonable, "I don't approve of what Tia did either. She meant well. What she did was wrong, I agree, but
I agree, you agree," he said, interrupting.
"But we always come down to that. Tia is dead now. We can all agree on that.
She's dead, but it's not over. It's far from over. Other One Wings will call her a hero, a martyr. She died for the cause of lying, for the freedom to lie. How many more lies will be told? How long will it be before the people forget their mistrust of us? Since the One Wings refused to repudiate Tia and split away from us, there is talk among a few, of closing down the academies and ending the challenges, returning to the old way, to the old days when a flyer was a flyer for once and for all. You don't want that."
"No, no, I don't."
His shoulders slumped for a moment uncharacteristically, and he sighed.
"But, Maris, it goes beyond what I want or what you want. It's out of our hands now.
Val spoke the death warrant for the One Wings when he led them out of council and called his illegal sanction.
Sanctions can be revoked, Maris said.
Doral stared at her, his eyes narrowed.
Did Val One Wing tell you that?
I don't believe him. He's playing some devious game, trying to use you to trick me.
Doral!
She stood up, indignant.
Give me some credit, please. I'm not one of Val's puppets.
He didn't promise to revoke the sanction, and he's not using me. I tried to convince him that it would be in everyone's best interest to act in such a way that both Flyer Born and One Wings were united again. Val is stubborn and impulsive, but he's not blind. Although he wouldn't promise to revoke the sanction, I did make him see what a mistake he had made. That his sanction was useless because it was honored only by a small group, and that this division among flyers was to no one's advantage.
Doral looked at her thoughtfully. Then he too rose and began to pace around the small, dusty room.
Quite a feat to get Val One Wing to admit he was wrong, he said.
But what good does that do now? Does he agree that the plan we followed was right?
No, Maris said. I don't think it was right either. I think you were much too harsh.
Oh, I know what you thought. I know you had to repudiate Tia's crime, and you thought the best way to do that was to hand her over to the landsman for execution.
Doral stopped walking and frowned at her.
Maris, you know that was never my intention. I never thought Tia should die. But Val's proposal was absurd. It would have seemed that we condoned her actions.
The council should have insisted that Tia be given over for punishment and then stripped Tia of her wings forever.
We did strip her of her wings.
No, said Maris. You let the landsman do that, after he'd hanged her in them.
Why do you suppose he did that? To show that he could hang a flyer and go unscathed.
Doral looked horrified. He crossed the room and gripped her arm.
Maris, no.
He hung her in her wings?
She nodded.
I hadn't heard that. He sank down on his chair again as if his legs had been kicked.
He proved his point, Maris said. He proved that flyers could be killed as easily as anyone else.
And now they will be. Now that you and Val have split flyers and One Wings into two warring camps, the landsmen will take advantage of it. They'll demand oaths of loyalty. They'll set up rules and regulations to govern their flyers. They'll execute the rebels for treason. In time, perhaps, they'll claim the wings as their own property, to be handed out to followers who please them. Other flyers could be arrested, even executed, tomorrow. All it will take is for one more landsman to realize he has the power, that the flyers are too fragmented now to offer any opposition.
She sat down and gazed at him, almost holding her breath, as she hoped for the right response.
Slowly, Doral nodded.
What you say has a horrible ring of truth to it.
But what can I do?
Only Val and the other One Wings can decide to rejoin us. You surely don't expect me to try to rally the other flyers in a belated sanction of our own.
Of course not. But it's not only up to Val. It can't be. There are two sides, and both of you must make some gesture of reconciliation.
And what might that gesture be?
Maris leant forward.
Join the Black Flyers, she said.
Mourn Tia. Join the others. When word goes out that Doral of Laos has joined the One Wings in mourning, others will follow.
Mourn? He frowned. You want me to dress in black and fly in a circle?
His voice was suspicious.
What else am I to join your Black Flyers in?
Is it your plan to enforce the sanction against Deos by keeping all the flyers in formation above it?
No, not a sanction. They don't stop any flyers who bring a message to or from Deos, and if you or any of your followers had to leave the circle, no one would stop you. Just make the gesture.
This is more than a gesture, and more than mourning. I'm certain of it, Doral said.
Maris, be honest with me. We've known each other for a very long time. For the love I still bear for you, I would do much. But I can't go against what I believe, and I won't be tricked. Please don't play one of Val One Wing's games and try to use me. I think you owe me honesty.
Maris looked steadily back into his eyes, but she felt a pang of guilt. She was trying to use him. He was an important part of her plan, and because of what they'd once meant to each other, she had felt certain he would not let her down. But she did not mean to deceive him. She said quietly, "I've always thought of you as my friend, Dor, even when we were opposed. But I'm not asking you to do this for me just out of friendship. It's more important than that. I think it's equally important to you that this rift between the One Wings and the Flyerborn be healed. Tell me the whole truth, then. Tell me what you want me to do and why." "I want you to join the Black Flyers, to prove that the One Wings do not fly alone. I want to bring Flyers and One Wings together again, to show the world that they can still act as one. You think that if Val One Wing and I fly together, we will forget all our differences?" Maris smiled ruefully. "Perhaps once, long ago, I was that naive. No more. I hope that the One Wings and the Flyerborn will act together." "How? In what way beyond this odd mourning ceremony?" "The Black Flyers carry no weapons, make no threats, and do not even land on Theos," she said. "They are mourners, nothing more. But their presence makes the landsman of Theos very nervous. He does not understand. Already he is so frightened he has called his landsguard from Thrain. And therefore the Black Flyers have succeeded where Tia failed and ended the war." "But surely the landsman will get over his fear, and the Black Flyers cannot circle Theos forever." "The landsman here is an impetuous, bloody-minded and fearful man," Maris said. "The violent always suspect others of violence, and it is not his way to wait for someone else to act. I think he will do something before long. I think he will give the Flyers cause to act." Doral frowned. "By doing what? Shooting a flight of arrows to knock us from the sky? Us?" Doral shook his head, but he was smiling. "It could be dangerous, Maris, trying to provoke him to action." His smile heartened her. "The Black Flyers do nothing but fly. If Port Theos grows agitated in their shadows, that is the work of the landsman and his subjects."
"Especially the singers and the healers. We know what troublemakers they can be."
"I'll do as you ask, Maris. It will make a good story to tell my grandchildren when they come along. I won't have my wings much longer now, anyway, with Jan getting to be such a good flyer."
"Oh, Dor!"
He held up one hand.
"I will wear black as a sign of grief for Tia," he said carefully, "and I will join the great circle that flies to mourn her. But I will do nothing that might be seen as condoning her crime or expressing a sanction against Theos for her death."
He stood up and stretched.
"Of course, if anything should happen, if the landsman should presume to exceed his powers and threaten the Flyers, why then, we should all, One Wings and Flyerborn, have to act together."
Maris also stood. She was smiling.
"I knew you would see it that way," she said.
She wrapped her arms around him and pulled him to her in an affectionate hug. Then Doral lifted her face and kissed her. Perhaps just for old time's sake, but for a moment it was as if all the years that lay between them had never been, and they were youths again, and lovers, and the sky was theirs from horizon to horizon, and all that lay beneath it. But the kiss ended, and they stood apart again, old friends linked by memories and faint regrets.
"Go safely, Dor," said Maris. "Come back soon."